You're now listening to Time Zone. Leroy J.
Hey, what's up, people? This is your boy Leroy J. Stream. Come back on another show. And I know the last show was really long, and I said it wasn't gonna be. So I mean it on this one. It's not gonna be that long. I really mean it. So I'm gonna go in here. I'm just gonna break this show. No news. This is another single-minded show. Trying to get my focus people. So this is a single-minded show. We're focusing on this. We're going down the unbeaten path of that alternative stretch of road in comic book land. We're going away from the spandex, superpowers, and all of that stuff to some of the comic books that you kind of don't use. Won't find, you have to search for, or you have to ask your comic book guy. And on another note, not getting off the topic, but I found a great comic book place. It's in Fayetteville, Georgia, and it's called Dave's Comics in Fayetteville, Georgia. I think it's at 107 Rainbow Highway. I don't know what it is, but Rainbow Highway, I mean, it's around the corner. I go there all the time, so, you know, maybe I'll put my number out, or, you know, you can hit me on Twitter, at Leroy_Jetstream. I give the address there, but it's the best comic book shop probably in fucking Georgia. This guy has everything you need. I mean, he has Robotech, he has the new DC, he has new Marvel, he has all that Todd McFarlane Spawn figurines. He has all of that. He has comic books up the wazoo. Has graphic novels everywhere, and it's in true comic book fashion style where there is clutter and shit everywhere, but it's wonderful. You can't have a comic book shop that's too fucking neat. That means, you know, you don't have enough comics in that bitch. So no, it's you know, it's sloppy, but you know, you dig through it. And right now I know he has some back issues for like 50¢ a piece, so he has some wonderful stuff from the 80s. It's just nice stuff. So now that's over with. Some other comic book news. You know, Tim Dog mainly does the Marvel and the new stuff coming out. I don't want to bump heads with Tim Dog because he's doing such a great job. So check out his podcast. He's doing a really great job. And this isn't as easy as it seems or as it looks and making it seem, but he does a really good job with comic books. And this is going to be my first comic book review. Like I said, we're off the beaten path. With this comic book, and this comic book is kind of neat to me. It's by Tom Morello. And you might remember Tom Morello from such groups as Audio Slave. I think he's done a couple of sets with the band Tool. Never heard Tool stuff. I have heard of Audio Slave. And I have heard of this other band that he was with, Rage Against the Machine. So anybody was back in like the late 90s, you didn't know about Rage Against the Machine or Audio Slave. But they was like this shit. I mean, you couldn't go to Best Buy and not see them on a fucking end cap and their CD everywhere on about two or three end caps at Best Buy. Back when Best Buy had music. That's another story. Now, well, Tom has branched off. He's written a comic book. And this comic book now is called Orchid. Excuse me, I have a little bit of tea. And a comic book called Orchid is published under Dark Horse Comic Books. And we know Dark Horse does good stuff. Mainly their flagship stuff is, basically, I think, all the Star Wars stuff is basically Dark Horse. Could be some more stuff. I think, that and Hellboy. And maybe a couple of others. But Dark Horse, it's up there with the big boys. I shouldn't say that it's, you know, kind of not with the big boys, because it really is, but it falls more along the line, like with the big boys have like Vertigo. Those are more of the alternative, more mature comics. So Dark Horse always kind of goes on more mature, or those guys out in left field kind of stuff. So we like I said, we have Orchids by Tom Morello, and the art is by a Scott Heppard and colors by Dan Jackson. Now, I'm going to be reviewing Volume 1, and this is in a graphic novel, and what's going on is when you do a graphic novel, for everybody who doesn't know, they basically take all of the issues and compress them into a little book. So, this volume one that I'm going over is going to be for comic books. It's going to be comic books 1 through 4. And these are comic books that came out on Dark Horse from 2011 to 2012. Also, let everybody know, it's out now. I think it came out on December the 12th. I'm not sure. But Volume 2 is already out. So if you want to catch Volume 2, give me a call. Let me know what the hell happened, because I haven't done Volume 2 yet. Cool. Now, and also Volume 3 is going to come out this summer, 2013. Okay, now, going into comic book. Basically, what Orchid is about is a post-apocalyptic world where I guess a nerd, a prostitute, and their friends basically team up to overthrow a warlord in this post-apocalyptic world. And that's really kind of basically it for this volume. Now, what this volume 1 through 4, what this is this is basically an origin story. But it's not an origin story for who you think. Not an origin story for the people. This one is an origin story for the world that they live in. So it's going to kind of explain to you what happened and the changes and why things are like the way they are. Because he, you know, I guess Tom wants to kind of put us more in the world. And I read the little editor thing. And basically what this comic book is about is he's using kind of a science fiction comic book world to talk about the classism that is going on now with, you know, globalization. Some people call it, you know, there's a great book about it called The World is Flat. You know, but they're talking about globalization, everybody buying and shopping, and really the end of what was imperialism, and now we have kind of globalization, you know, free open markets. He's kind of talking about how corporations kind of run wild and they kind of go amok and do things. And what this is really about is kind of, you know, our worst nightmares come true of this globalization with corporations being able to do anything, you know. A while back, you know, the Republicans during the election were really big on this thing of trying to make a corporation a person, give a corporation the same rights that people have. But, you know, we all know a corporation can have those rights, it's not a damn person. But they still wanted to have those rights, so can't disagree with them on that. Okay, now, look, back to the convo. So, you're introduced to this world. So now, what basically happens in this world is, you know, I love my post-apocalyptic stuff. I love my Mad Max with the oil shortages and the war. You know, I love my Thunder the Barbarian. You know, hey, Thunder the Barbarian has the best post-apocalyptic. Damn comic came too close. Either cracked the moon in half or knocked it out of orbit. And now we have this crazy mixed up world, which is very similar to what happens in Orchid. Basically, through global warming, through global warming and offshore dumping of toxic waste and radiation and chemicals into the ocean, what happens is the oceans rise and basically drown out all the coastal cities, all of our main islands, and turn everything into a wetland and a swamp of toxic waste and radiation from all the waste that we dumped way out in sea comes back in. And all the people are forced to run the high ground and kind of hide out, or they hide out on these barges and ships until all this subsides, which this takes centuries for this to subside, for the water to recede. So while this is receding, basically he leaves a great quote in here that, when the seas rose, the genetic code was smashed. Something sounds like a musician would, you almost could sing that, couldn't you? But basically, in this soup or this muck or this new wave primordial ooze, is this soup of genetic cultures now have been, like you said, smashed. So you have this new, you have, first of all, you have corpses, toxic waste, dead animals, all this dead stuff is mixing it together. And the stuff that's born out of is like some really, I'm going to be honest with you. I like where he was going with some of the animals, although I do find the animals, some of the animals are really ridiculous. I'm sorry. I like the columns ridiculous, like the scorpion bears are hilarious. They're bears who are very giant and they have scorpion tails, and I find that shit funny. Or the porcupine monkeys. There is a, I'll get into that later, but you have porcupine monkeys. You have all these little grotesque things that he's trying to make. These lions, these dinosaurs. But, you know, the code was like smash, so you have all these animals. But the main, just these animals are hostile to anything human. It's the Earth's way of putting humans in check for what it caused, the damage it did to Earth. So the animals hate human beings, and they're highly hostile. And also, for whatever reason, maybe the planet or maybe fate, but these animals are gigantic and big, and not only they're hostile, but they're built with incredible defensive and offensive systems. You know, usually spikes, a lot of teeth, a lot of claws, and usually they have, shell-plated bodies. So, that's kind of the world they're living in. So the people live in fear of these animals, so you go to high ground. All the rich people move to high ground, they create these big giant fortresses on the high ground. And when you're rich, I guess you have money, so they also hire troops and protection, and any of the corporations that were still left kind of banded together, and in true geek nerd fashion, the super scientists take over. And this would be the equivalent of, rest his soul, if Steve Jobs kind of took over an island and started just making shit, making his own rules. And this is kind of what we have in this comic book, where he makes the scientists and the geeks are in control. So they're really breaking a lot of eggs and making stuff. You know, one scientist makes these robo animals, and that's where it gets another little hilarious thing to me. They have a locomotive wolf. The wolf is like part fire, in part like old timey steam engine, and part like big bad wolf and shit. And it's like I gotta get used to the animals on here. But don't get me wrong, they're vicious. They'll fuck you up. They'll kill you. The insects look very scary, and some of the other stuff looks scary. But some of the mammals, it's like, yeah, right. But So basically, you have the premise of the people of Grand Hound Fortress. They basically enslave the poor. The poor people in here are called the Bridge People. And a derogatory term for them is called a greenfooter or a greenfoot. Maybe that's the term, I don't know why they call it that. They call it greenfooter, greenfoot. And they're basically the people on the bottom. Now, it goes to a story where there was a guy called General China, who was almost about to defeat the warlord, Tomo Wolf. That's T-O-M-O, Wolf. He's about to defeat him. But he was defeated and his forces was beaten back, and he also lost this mask that he wears. And anyway, a group of guys, rebels, roll in and they steal this mask. And Tomo Wolf wants his mask back because this mask is basically his trophy from defeating General China. Plus, the mask is also known to grant whoever wears it special powers. Not superpowers, but I guess power of just will and determination, kind of. And also, it's a symbol of hope, to the people. Kind of like in the Marvel world, we would have Captain America would be the symbol of hope to people. So we have that. So, story starts off where we have Anzo. He's the leader of this raid. They steal the mask back, but with them stealing the mask back from this guy named Don Glickin. I might be pronouncing it wrong. It's G-L-E-T-K-I-N. And Don Glickin basically roughs him up a little bit. And in roughing him up, Anzo fights back. he knocks a mask out of his hand. One of Ansel's subordinates, the guy underneath him, Simon steals a mask, jumps off the bridge for his dear life, never to be seen again. And Simon wakes up, finds himself alive in this little village and town. Now the writer takes time on this in the book, going to introduce this fucked up world that they're living in. You have kids bathing in toxic waves with rotten corpses, and he witnesses a man being eaten apart by a mutant. Now, this is another one of the animals. This was like a mutant triceratops wolf sloth thing that ate this guy up. And also, he notices that the people are addicted to a hallucinogenic leech. Hallucinogenic white leech that, you know, many people take. They stick the leech on them and they just zone out. It's like people today would use those frogs from whatever country it is. They lick the frog and they hallucinate crazy shit anyway. And he also witnesses many of the people from the old rebellion who are now broken. So there are a lot of veterans from the old rebellion who, you know, their spirits have been broken. They're panhandling. They don't really have money. They barter for everything, but they're begging for food or whatever. And the only commerce or true trade in this village that he notices is prostitution. And there's also a slave trade there, which pretty much preys on the weak in the town. Now, through this little scene, we go to a scene in our boards where we go to our main antagonist character in here, or protagonist, I guess, is Orchid, our prostitute. Now, Orchid's a very interesting character. Orchid is a brunette. Can't quite tell what Orchid is. She's brunette, apparently maybe white, Spanish. Can't tell. She's kind of that comic book nationality, homogenous thing going. But she's a prostitute. So the prostitutes wear these headdresses and, cargo pants, whatever. I mean, this is post-apocalyptic, so they make it do what they have. Like, this is interesting to me. Is across her collarbones, above the breast, they have tattooed across on them property. It's in big bold letters, English property. And this is what all the prostitutes have, and everybody knows that their property is to someone or owned by someone. And I found that very funny because now, I guess the trend now for a lot of the girls walking around is to get these tattoos across their collarbone of sayings and things they want and all this. Well, people know how I feel about tramp stamps, and, you know, it's like I found that kind of funny that he used that thing as a property because, you know, it's just kind of nice right there. You can't cover it up. You can't hide it. And, you know, in a really sick kind of way, it doesn't mess up the breast because, you know, nobody wants to look at breasts that's all tattooed up. You know, so anyway, she has that. Plus, she also has a branding of Know Your Role that a pimp put on her. Established her as the pretty much, I wouldn't say she's a prostitute with a heart of gold, but it does establish her as being a resourceful and, might I add, I guess, spunky prostitute, because she gets in a fight with a pimp over money that she owes him, doesn't pay him the money, and, you know, gets into a fight with him, kind of gets the better of him and runs off. So she runs home, and while all this is going on, we flip to another panel. And Simon, who is wandering around this world, trying to figure everything out, saves this little kid from another whacked out monster in this world, from a centipede. It's a centipede baboon wolf thing that he saves them from, kind of thing. And, you know, then establishes the mother, the brother, and the mother and the brother meet him. Orchid comes home. Who the fuck is this guy, Simon? Give you kind of a brief thing on Simon. Simon is the quintessential nerd geek in here. Simon has glasses, he's blonde, he's maybe one of the less civilized people, but Simon speaks very correct English, he speaks very nerdy, he has a journal, he documents everything, and he thinks just incessantly, he talks out loud incessantly, plus he still uses, you know, big words, which people in society are uneducated, so everybody's like, why does he talk so funny? And just give you some background on Simon and kind of in that world, and I kind of segue in this. The reason why Simon is the way he is because some slaves that showed aptitude in this world are sent to a place called a robotic camp. And it's a slave camp for slaves who are smart, and they teach them how to fix and repair the robots from the centuries before the flooding and everything happened, to repair the robo-animals, robo-dogs, or whatever robot things they need to fix, do stuff. And that's what he did. That's the kind of world he ended. You have other people in this world where when this happened, people jumped on ships, cruise ships, or barges, and they was just going to pretty much try and stay on the oceans and ride this out. Like some kind of sick, adventure with Noah from the Bible. Although, Noah, that was like 40 days, 40 nights. Didn't last that long and succeeded. On this one, this shit lasted centuries. So it's like, it's years before the other two ends. In this world they live in, and some people have been on barges and ships. Many of the barges did make the land and come back, and the barges are cannibalized and taken and used to put underground little passageways. These underground passageways are created because, like I told you earlier, the animals in this world are hostile. And the animals in this world are just called wild. And if you're in the wild, then you're pretty much fucked up. Because you got some weird shit come to eat and kill you. And, that was a lot of the problems. These animals can't be domesticated. And that brings me to another part of the world. Because these animals can't be domesticated, they return to the easiest way to domesticate human beings. So, they domesticate the humans, having humans doing heavy labor and stuff like that. That's what a lot of humans doing. They break down the classes. You have the rich people. And then you have the bridge people who are the lowest of the low, and they basically do all the hard work. Now, moving along to the story, they're traveling underneath the wild, underneath one of these pits I just told you about, where they made out of barges that came on land, took them apart, and made these underground tunnels from old sewage ways, and make these underground tunnels and stuff, and have hatches and stuff to come up. Well, Simon, through some form of trickery, he tricks his pit boss, who to me is dressed a lot like Nero, into taking him, Orchid, and her brother on with him. So they leave with him, and, they're going to the city of Penwell. The reason they're going to Penwell is because Anzo, the guy I told you about earlier in the rebellion, is at Penwell, and he's going to be executed. So Simon is trying to get back to Mount Oreskew. Don't know how that's going to work for Simon, but he's trying to do that. You have to see Simon. You have to see Simon to kind of understand how you wonder how this rescue is going to go through. It's like a big guy, and it's a fortress, so it's well guarded. So anyway, go through that, and they get with this guy, and then you see, Simon tricks this Nero guy into putting on the hood. Guy puts on the hood, and the hood immediately crushes his head. That is one of the things that they kind of leave out about the hood. Whoever dons a hood, who's of pure heart, then they will be granted, I guess, instant determination. But whoever is not of pure heart, well, the hood crushes your head from the inside. Wow, gruesome. Now, get past that, they get there, they run away from him, they're almost attacked and killed by my fucking scorpion bears. Some funny ass scorpion bears, and then they're saved by a little crazy old woman. And they live with a crazy woman for a while, stress about the health, they see some things that the crazy woman has, that she uses weapons. She talks about military and tactics and sings songs that they know nothing about. She has a four-legged thing that eats apples, which is a horse. And they're basically just kind of, either kind of half a prisoner, half kind of with her. So they kind of go through that part with Opal on there. Now, that part is kind of okay to read. And then you have a part where Simon is going back trying to figure out stuff. Because Simon does not know the true effect of the mask. He has witnessed people being, you know, killed by the mask, but he doesn't know the true power of the mask. And I'm not going to give that away, but if you read the book, you might understand how the character, which we're going to go into a flashback, Opal, you know, does with the mask. So we find the old lady's name is Opal. We find the old lady is tied to the general himself. Goes to a flashback of General China and their love affair and them growing up together, trapped on a cannibal barge together. And how they come across this warlord, how they obtain the mask, and how he basically becomes General China, and how he pretty much terrorizes his own. And then he meets Tomo Wolf, and basically his tragic ending. We kind of move from that. Now, we move from that, and we get to another part of the story, which I really like, which is the guy named Don, and his name is Barbaris. Don Barbaris is a very interesting character. Don Barbaris is an African-American character. He was born and raised in the wild on the edges, and he is a mutant. And what I love about him is he's really answered to me to way back when I was a kid. I hated fucking Tarzan. I like to yell and shit, but I hated Tarzan. And I never could understand Tarzan. I had all these Africans around, and Tarzan was the only motherfucker that could talk to a damn lion and talk to cheetah and shit. And I'm like, these motherfuckers live there, and like, you know, they go get Tarzan anyway. He's kind of the answer to that problem I've had. He is born a mute with blackened eyes and a very gentle, apparently, disposition. But he is shunned by his family, and he has an innate ability to control, I guess, telepathically the animals with his mind, to control the animals of the wild. And that's a very important thing, because no one can domesticate the animals of the wild. But he can. They follow his bidding, and he is basically the wild king of, you know, king of the wild, or the king, you know, king of them. Now, his story is interesting because his family doesn't know what to do with him. They lock him up in a cage. And, you know, his brothers and sisters torment him. They don't feed him. They hope he dies. But the animals of the wild at nighttime bring him food so he can survive. Then they leave during the day, and then his family taunts him. Well, he reaches a certain age, and, you know, he hasn't died, and he's still living. And he basically breaks out of his metal cage, and he goes into the room of his family, siblings, and he slits all of their throats. And then, once all the throats are slit, he somehow telepathically makes them into his henchmen. So they're like his silent henchmen of his family. Doesn't kill them. And he goes off into the wild with the animals, and he creates this, like, fortress of the wild and, you know, everything. And Tom Wolf basically finds this man who can control these animals, and they're stopping him from getting to this certain part of the jungle. He finds them, they make a negotiation, and he negotiates that, you know what, Tomo Wolf basically states that I won't kill anything here in this sanctuary if you have the animals do my bidding from time to time. So in the story, they send Barbaris, Don Barbaris, out to get him, to get, you know, the mask back from Simon, Orchid, and at this time Opal and the brother. And now, in doing this, they send him after her. This is a new terror. They don't know who this is, but they're terrified. And in the melee, Orchid's brother is kind of in that comic book questionable way. He is captured and maybe even killed. We don't know, but it's enough to send Opal over the edge. Not Opal, I'm sorry. Orchid. It's enough to send Orchid over the edge. Opal saves him, but didn't save the brother. So it's enough to send him over the edge. And we'll send Orchid over the edge. Let me slow down. Send Orchid over the edge. So Orchid's like, look, my mother's gone. You see, a lot of this crap is bad. And, you know, now my only family member is gone. Shit's fucked up. I don't care. You know, I might not have started it. You know, I'm not down with your shit, Simon. I don't want to go. But I want some payback, damn it. I'm mad. So that was fine. This is what finally gets her really into the comic book, because before then, she's not into this shit. What's going on? She is going on, and she's just bitching and moaning and hates Simon. Doesn't want to be there and hates Simon for the bullshit he's put her into. So, you know, that's kind of what goes on. So that's really kind of the gist of this comic book. And I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it's a great comic book for getting off the beaten path. You know, especially when you get tired of, you know, reading spandex and stuff, and you want to read something. So the origins are pretty great. You know, I like how Tom O'Wolf is kind of dressed up like a pope, and then he may be still using certain vestiges of religion to possibly control people. And I like how they do the breakdown of kind of everybody kind of in the book. The artwork is exceptional, excellent. It's just along that style. It's a very graphic and realistic style. Great inking, great color. I like for the fact that they keep the colors in the comic book, even when they're in dark settings, really bright, or when the sun's setting, they keep it really bright. Because the comic book could really be a dark comic book and get darker. Maybe he's going to go there, but right now, he's kind of keeping it light. He's just trying to kind of draw you in there and just let you get a little, you know, kind of draw you in first. He doesn't want to just throw the crazy stuff at you. So he's just kind of draw you in. The color's great. I like the fact that he's making it a multiracial cast. Or a matter of fact, that pretty much racist stuff in this comic book is kind of broken down. We have people I think maybe Spanish, black, you know, General China, black, I think. Not sure, not like it really matters. But you know, that's kind of fit everybody. And he's trying to give the whole thing about class and, you know, everything a post-apocalyptic world. Because when you read other stuff, sometimes with post-apocalypse, you know, African American minorities, sometimes we're not, which is bullshit. You know, we would be in some post-apocalyptic shit, you know. But most stuff you watch, you don't see us in post-apocalyptic stuff. We just were not down there. So, you know, I liked it. I don't know where it's gonna go. It's not quite what I expected. The cover art is so graphic and it grabs you and pulls you in and has her there with her headdress on, or her headdress and she's all defiant and stuff. And to be honest with you, it really looks like something out of heavy metal. Looks like something like you're looking at heavy metal and, you know, you're expecting to see some weird jacked up fuck scene and really extremely large guns and her getting fucked by a robot or some weird shit. But it's nothing like that. He's really trying to say something in the book about the global warming. So like I said, these first books, it's an origin tale of this world, and he's trying to build you up and wrap you into this world and trying to get you into the world and get you interested in this world and where this world is going to go, and kind of into like a orchid a little bit. So, you know, it does a good job. Like I said, I like the part of Opal. I like, you know, for a person who, this is his first comic book, you know, Tom Morello is doing a good job. This being his first comic book, and he's trying to make it about classism, which I think that's kind of hard to sell. So, you know, to me, you know, kudos. It's great. And, you know, give it a look, see, check it out. And I say just check it out. I mean, it's each his own. I think this might be more of maybe a comic book for your, well, I'm not going to really go there. I was going to say if you're a girl or whatever, but maybe women don't like comic books or whatever. But it's just something when you do the spandex. Want something a little bit different. Maybe something to think about. I don't know. Then, you know, check out Orchid. Like I said, the other one is out this month. Volume 2 is out. Excuse me, and you know, just check that out and give it a good look. See, so, this podcast is short, 35 minutes. So, going ahead and wrap it up. Now, I hope you enjoyed this one. So, I'm not a comic aficionado. I'm not a writer. I just like comic books. I just like to read them. And I like to talk about them. So, you know, you can go on ahead and hit me up on Twitter as Leroy. At Leroy_Jetstream. I repeat that. That's at Leroy_Jetstream. Go ahead and hit me up on Twitter. You know, you have any responses, anything you don't like. And believe me, people, I'm going to start trying to communicate more on Twitter. I'm not that much of a social media kind of guy. I'm just not that really into it. And I was into Facebook for a minute, but it kind of turned me off. And I really like Google Plus, but it's not on them enough to really do nothing. So, yo, thanks for listening, and peace.